Welcome back to the Garden with Joy and Holly radio show. Moments away, Robert Kirk. But first, it's still warm. Yellow Jackets can still attack. Rescue has the product that will help you with that situation.
As we come to the end of summer with these dry months, you'll notice more aggressive Yellow Jackets. They've been flying around. Yellow Jackets are looking for anything from your barbecue meats. Maybe you're outside with some hot sweet tea or any other water source. You can keep them at bay with the Rescue Yellow Jacket traps. Rescue Yellow Jacket traps are an eco-friendly do-it-yourself option to keep those stinging pests away from you. These traps use a powerful lure for Yellow Jackets and will not attract beneficial honeybees. All rescue products are made in the USA. You can go to rescue.com where you can find the Rescue Yellow Jacket traps and other pest control solutions. That's rescue.com.
Holly, let's go to the hotline and bring in our guest for this week.
Robert Kirk is an avid gardener, landscape designer, author, and organic grower. He is also a horticultural researcher and passionate about sustainable food gardens. His most recent book, Sustainable Food Gardens, is full of great information. Welcome to the program, Robert.
Hi, Holly. Hi, Joey.
Well, we thank you for taking time out of your very busy schedule, not only to educate Holly and myself, but all of our listeners across the country. We thank you for the time you're going to offer us.
No problem.
So let's just dive right into this. You encourage people to use drip irrigation instead of hand watering or using a hose. Why is this, and what are some good tips for those who haven't yet found the world of drip irrigation?
Okay, well, basically, if you use drip irrigation properly, you can get at least 20% greater yields than using a hose or hand watering. Of course, you save upwards to 50% water, but like one woman was growing chilies, she used 38% less water with her drip, but got 48% more chilies. So the basic guideline is to control the drip irrigation system based on the weather, not just guessing, oh, I think I'll do 15 minutes. And so you base it on the weather, and if you get a drought, so-called drought of 2 to 4 weeks, several times a summer, you can pretty much justify a drip system, I think.
Now, do you recommend putting a mulch over top of the drip irrigation system, or what would you recommend in that situation?
In the best situation is to put the drip down on top of the soil and then mulch over the drip tubing so it doesn't get sunlight. The ultraviolet light can degrade the material over a 10-year period.
That's some great information. Now, you speak a lot about edible landscaping. What is that, and how is that different than just growing a veggie garden?
Well, the main guideline to edible landscaping is more growing things in clusters and plantings and not in rows, like a long row of corn, more of a cluster of corn. Or you can also do things like ornamental cabbages this time of year, so you have the color of the cabbage, but not necessarily planted in a straight line. In fact, one of my friends grew ornamental cabbage in what they call the hell strip, the area between the street and the sidewalk, and he had a lot to eat, and nobody stole his cabbage.
Yeah, people are not familiar with, just because it says ornamental, that doesn't mean it's not edible.
Exactly, good point.
And when we're talking about edible landscape, we're not really talking about hiding the plants in amongst, you know, flowers or shrubs or anything like that. We're just growing.
No,
some people
say, oh, you got to stick everything together. But the problem with mixing them too much is if you have a lettuce tucked amongst the other ornamentals, oftentimes you forget where it is until it's too late and you see the seed head coming up.
Right.
And then it's too bitter to eat. Yeah.
Time and effort wasted because you tried to do too much and you should have just kind of made a little more simpler.
Yes, yes. Like, we have to use raised beds where I live because the gophers eat the roots, so we do raised beds of wood with wire bottoms. But in an edible landscape, they'd be more put out, let's say, in a big arc, as opposed to lining them up in straight lines and rows.
Now, with that, I guess it's called, some people will term it gopher wire. Is it a certain gauge of wire, a certain thickness, or are you just trying to create any type of resistance from the gophers going up into the raised bed?
it needs to be half inch or smaller. You can use what's called aviary wire. Chicken wire, they don't go below 1 inch, but aviary wire you can find at half inch, or you can use hardware cloth. Hardware cloth is a lot more expensive, but it has a heavier gauge, and aviary wire has a heavier gauge than chicken wire.
The little more expense may, in the long run, prevent a lot of anger and frustration from the gophers getting into the raised bed.
Yeah, the anger reduction is very important.
Yes. Yeah, very much so.
Well, your newest book is full of great information as we look through it. It is called Sustainable Food Gardens. What is it about, and what can you tell us that would encourage our listeners to pique their interest to pick up a copy?
Great. Well, basically the subtitle is Organic Gardening Myths and Solutions. So it applies to both any type of gardening relative to food, but it's really geared towards organic gardeners and trying to separate the myths from the realities. And I use an awful lot of citations because the book is very based on science, as opposed to anecdotal information. So you'll find very few gardening books with as many citations as my book, so you can look up anything in detail that you'd like to find more information about.
So when we talk about garden myths and your passion for this book, for people who are curious like me, how long and how much in-depth work went into producing a book that has this type of knowledge in it?
Well, basically, it's sort of like a summary of my last 40 years of work. But I started 10 years ago writing the book a little bit, but I really went deep into it with the pandemic. So it took about 18 months to write and to lay out. I do all the page layout. So 18 months and 10, 20 hours a day, it seemed like.
Okay, so we are talking with Robert Kurek. He's a author, avid gardener, and organic grower.
So we love no-till gardening, and we understand that you are in that same element, that you love it as well. Why would you encourage gardeners to look at a no-till gardening method rather, and is there a place for tilling in the garden?
Yes, there. I'm not a church of no-till. I believe that you pick the method suit your needs. I have a lot of data in my books about the fact that the soil biota is very prolific in the top 4 inches, but drops drastically as you go 4 more inches deep, sometimes by 50% less microbes in the second 4 inches than the first 4 inches. And when you till the soil, you can destruct the microbes or make it difficult for them to live. But you can get a lot of value out of legumes by tilling them in as a green manure. So you grow the legume till it's 4, 5, 6 inches high. Then you till it in, and then you can let it rest for a few weeks, and then you can plant so that you can increase your nitrogen content for free.
And with those microbes, the key element to a healthy microbes is good organic material in the soil. I know like Florida has like 1 inch of organic material. We have 3 or 4 inches. How can people safely and organically build the levels of organic material in their garden, cost effectively?
Yeah. Well, basically, green manuring can really speed things up fast. You just have to pay for the seed, and it doesn't take much seed to cover a small area. Next way to go is to do deep mulches and allow them to rot in place and improve the soil from the top down. If you really want to speed things up, I grow food on straw bales, and let the bales rot down, and they become like compost, and they develop the soil from the top down very rapidly.
Yeah, we find the straw bales, for people who want little work, straw bale gardening seems to be the mindset of that kind of individual. I want something easy but effective. Straw bales, if done right, works really well.
Yes. You have to get enough nitrogen on top of the straw to start decomposing. But if you do that right, Like I grew potatoes in great quantity on top of straw bales.
So we love garden myths and debunking them, and I know your book is based on a lot of that. What is maybe your favorite or biggest garden myth, or both, and the truth behind it?
Well, I like to say the aphids don't suck, that they're not actually a sucking insect. They have mouth parts that open and close, and so it's dependent upon the sap pressure for the sap to get into the aphid and come out. Now, why is that important? Well, the more you increase your nitrogen, the more you increase the sap pressure. So after a certain level of nitrogen, you've got so much sap pressure that you can support a much higher colony of aphids. So it really shows you how important keeping the nutrition balanced is.
And that's why there are instructions on the back of fertilizer bags, because a little is good, a lot doesn't mean it's better.
Exactly, especially nitrogen. A little bit of extra phosphorus or potash can actually reduce aphids.
And that's the second and third number on all fertilizer bags for those who are unfamiliar with how that is registered and scored on a bag. In the process of making the book, was there any things that absolutely floored you, surprised you, that you thought, wow, how come I didn't know that already?
Oh, well, I found an awful lot of citations about research studies that showed that beneficial insects can travel 50 feet, 100 feet, 500 feet into the field next to them, so that you really don't have to have plants in the sense of companion planting. You don't have to have them touching or right next to each other. So like what I do now in designs is I make flower gardens near the perimeter of the vegetable garden or the food. And the flower gardens become cut flowers, but also there's beneficial insect attractant. So we know a lot more about what flowers attract what beneficial insects, but they don't have to be clustered right on top of the food garden.
Well, we really appreciate your time with us today, Robert. How can people find out more about you, and when and where can they pick up your great new book?
Great. Well, I have a detailed website, which is my name, no space, robertkourick.com, and it's K-O-U-R-I-K. And I have the book on there right now as a prelim price of 30% off list, so you can save a lot of money. And actually, it's cheaper than anything on Amazon. So go to my website, robertkourick.com.
And you will not be disappointed when you purchase the book. It's a good read. You got a lot of time over the winter to study it and learn things that you thought you already knew, but now Robert has corrected that knowledge so you can be a better gardener.
Yeah, it has 386 pages, so it'll take a while to go through.
Absolutely. Well, Robert, we greatly appreciate the time you've offered us and the knowledge you've shared, not only with Holly and myself, but all of our listeners across the country.
Great. I really enjoyed it, Joey. And thanks, Holly.
Absolutely. And
for more information, please visit thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com.